Hi there, and welcome to the COSI Talks podcast. My name is COSI Belloso. I'm a physical therapist with over 23 years experience, and my passion is working with the amputee and limb loss community. My mission with COSI Talks is to educate, inform, and empower amputees, their clinicians, family members, and caregivers. Now, along with being a physical therapist, I'm also a wife and a mother to four beautiful children, and I'm a recent breast cancer survivor. So while I'm not an amputee and I don't know what it's like to lose a limb, I do know what it means to have my world turned upside down from one day to the next and to have to go through the recovery and healing process. And I want to help you on your journey. So let's get comfortable. Be sure to grab your favorite drink and have a listen. Ooh, don't forget, please follow this podcast and leave a 5-star review and thumbs up. And if you have any questions or overly flattering comments, drop them below. All right, here we go. We got a lot of people who jumped on board this evening. We've got Liz coming in from Brooklyn, New York with her Diet Pepsi in her cup. We got Beth is in Florida. Yay, Beth. So John coming in from Pennsylvania. We got Don from Vancouver. Protein shake. Don, how is it going with picking out the feet for getting back to work? I want to know what the update is. We got Kenny from Virginia Beach with his rum and coke. Kenny, you know how to party, man. It is Nikki Anderson says, Earl from California, third day with AK prosthetic from Hanger. How is it going, Earl? Tell me about that. We got Victor from Sarasota, fellow Floridian. We got Richard now on Facebook. Let's see, Mark from Springfield, Ohio. Yes, this is going to be interesting, Mark. Dick Devers coming in with his spring water in West Virginia. We've got a nice crowd on board, guys, and I really appreciate you joining me in. I had a wonderful rest last week. My four beautiful children were on spring break, so I got to spend some time in North Carolina, the state where I was born, my home state, and got to enjoy just some beautiful weather there. All right, guys, so let's get this party started. For those of you joining me for the first time, welcome. My name is COSI Belloso. I'm a physical therapist, amputee specialist here in hot, sticky, now Tampa, Florida. I've been a PT for a little over 23 years. And as I mentioned, my passion is serving the amputee community. Now, some of you might be listening to this live show on my podcast. Yes, folks, I have decided to finally join Modern Times and I officially have a podcast and a blog to go with it. So here's the shameless plugging for this evening. Show of hands, how many of you guys have been watching my podcast? Or listening to my podcast? Show of hands. Hey there, Carol. We got Ken on board. We got Jerry coming in from Arizona. Hola, compadre. Thank you for joining in. Let's see. Emily says, going to my first in-person amputee support group on April 3rd. Wonderful, Emily. I can't tell you how much good that is to be able to be in a support group with fellow amputees talking about everything that you guys have been through. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful resource. Marianne, oh, it's good to see Marianne. She's got her electrolyte drink once again, 33 degrees in South Dakota. Holy smokes. Well, you can have some of our degrees, Marianne, because like I said, we were in the high 80s today. Okay. So Andrea has been watching, listening to my podcast. Who else? Y'all are too quiet, man. I'm only seeing one person who tells me that they were listening to my podcast. Come on now. Come on. Well, guys, for the podcast and the blog, okay, go to my COSI Talks account and it's under the main tab and it'll take you straight to the blog. It'll take you straight to the podcast. I'm on like all the different podcast channels. You can find me anywhere you listen to podcasts. So in the podcast, guys, I am uploading my Wednesday night live show. So tonight's show will be uploaded to my podcast channel. And I also have new content there that is only going to be available on my podcast. So there you go. Hey there, Tom. We got Christy also coming in from Nebraska. All right, guys. I've got lots of questions here, which make me very, very happy. Oh, Jerry, thank you so much. I appreciate that. She said she listened to the podcast and shared it. Guys, thank you. I really appreciate when you guys either share one of my posts, a live show, and now the podcast and the blog and help get the word out there. So very much appreciated. Thank you very much, Sherry. All right, let's start with Rob. Rob asks, this was actually one of those questions that I had missed, and I do apologize for that. He was asking Ronnie, the prosthetist I had on the show a couple of weeks back, if he had any experience with subischial sockets and looking to going from an ischial containment socket to a subischial for more mobility. So let's talk a little bit about, let me see if I can find an example here. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about sockets, AK sockets, and ischial and subischial and all that kind of fun stuff. So what are we talking about when we talk about an ischial containment socket, right? So ischial, where's Bob? Oh my God, where's Bob? Here he is. Here's Bob. He's my reluctant model for those of you who are joining me for the first time. All right. So basically your ischium is this bone right here. It's basically also known as your butt bone. So when you're your sit bone, when you sit down fair and square, you're sitting on your two ischium, ischii, ischials, ischial tuberosities, right? So the two butt bones right there, right? So one of the schools of thought in socket design is to do an ischial containment socket, meaning that your butt bone, and this is actually a right-sided AK socket, your butt bone should go into the socket. And the purpose of that is to create a stability. So it's to create a nice lock and to give stability to that femur so it doesn't go bell clapping around in the socket, right? The unfortunate side to that is to get that ischium all the way in there, you have to build a socket that's all the way up in the parts, right? And it gets very uncomfortable. There's very few people who can actually tolerate true ischial containment. And I have this discussion all the time with prosthetists, and they're all saying the same thing. To get a true ischial containment socket where that butt bone is sitting in that socket, it's kind of a tough call, right? Some people who have it and tolerate it do wonderfully with it. But for the most part, people are just like, man, this is just uncomfortable. Like it's riding up all the way in your groin. And then when you sit down, I mean, you're basically sitting down on that socket and it can be very uncomfortable. So one thing that we've been seeing a lot more in the past, I'd say 5 to 10 years, is called the subischial socket. So what that means is it's below the ischium. So it's basically bringing the trim lines down. Okay. Now in theory, right, that sounds awesome because you're not having to sit on a hard socket. It's not riding all the way up in your groin. It's a little bit more comfortable and you have more freedom of movement at the hip, right? Because you don't have that plastic socket all the way at the top part of your hip, okay? The downside to it is your prosthetist has to be super duper skilled, right? If your prosthetist has to be skilled to make a good ischial containment, they have to be super duper skilled at making a subischial socket. Okay. The lower your trim lines go in your socket, the less stability you're going to have from that socket, right? And also suspension, right? So your prosthetist has to be real good at getting a real snug fit and good suspension with the subischial socket. Okay. The other side is the patient responsibility. And here's what I mean by that. When you're lowering those trim lines, you lose the stability, which means your muscles have to do more work to keep you stable. And y'all know, y'all who've been watching the show know what muscles I'm talking about, right? Which muscles am I talking about, guys? Which muscles am I talking about? Come on. I'm going to give you guys like a minute to respond. Which muscles am I going to tell you that you have to strengthen like crazy if you're going to be using a subischial socket? Let's see, we got Nick, a physical therapist from Michigan. Hey, Nick, thank you for joining in. I always love having a fellow clinician join in. We've got Ryan on board. I see the Hungry Italian. I love that particular handle. The Grateful PT joined. I love all these handles from Instagram, reading them. They're a lot of fun. Yes, but, glutes. I know those of you watching me for the first time, I'm a little crazy, but it's okay. We have fun. Yes, guys. Okay. It's all about Betty. Oh my gosh, you guys. Betty Butt, Bertha Butt, Betty Butt Sister. Say it loud, say it proud, man. All right, you guys are awesome. So yes, basically, you know, as the higher up your amputation goes, the more you have to use your glutes, right? So my AKs need to have buns of steel. My AKs that use subischial socket, they need to have buns of like Kevlar, right? They need to be rock hard and solid, okay? Because your gluteal muscles are what's going to stabilize that pelvis and give you that power in your gait. Okay. I recently just had, and I know I've been trying to like get these videos uploaded. I had a patient 2 weeks ago and she came to see me and she probably from out of state, she probably had the best fitting subischial socket I have ever seen. Hands down, one of the best. It's like, I want to go meet that prosthetist and shake his hand, man. Cause that was that socket made me look like a rock star physical therapist, right? The patient was like, oh my gosh, Kosa, you did so much for me these past 3 days and helping me walk. And I'm just like, yeah, it really wasn't me. It's because you have a really awesome fitting socket. And it made my job that much easier, right? So we had her walking up and down, walking by herself, going up and down 3 stories worth of ramps. No joke. I took her to a conservation park and we walked uneven terrain all over the place. We even started teaching her the beginning of running mechanics in a subischial socket. It was amazing. Okay. So bottom line is, if you are thinking about getting a subischial socket, guys, first of all, you need to make sure your prosthetist is ready for the challenge, because it is a challenge, right? And don't be afraid. Say, you know, ask your prosthetist, how many subischial sockets do you typically make? Is this something you commonly do? Okay. And then just be sure you're going to have the commitment of doing a glute strengthening program. And for those of you asking, well, Kosi, where can I get a good glute strengthening program? Thank you for asking. I am going to put it right there. There's my program right there. I've got 150 exercise videos for AKs and BKs, and also 2 books that go along with it. And a very large portion of this exercise program is dedicated towards the bottom and how to strengthen the glutes. All right, you guys crack me up with these comments. I love it. Oh, Tom, thank you so much for listening to the podcast. I appreciate it. Scott, I am glad that you are here. Hey there, Dean, you stayed up and oh my gosh, I'm so excited that you're here to see us in live, Dean. Let's see, Dean says, my ischium has really desensitized and that's a good thing. Yeah, and guys, like I said, I have nothing against an ischial containment socket. I think it's a great tool to have in the prosthetist bag of tricks. But some folks just don't tolerate it. Right? Because it's just, it's really in there. All right, let's go to the next question. This one came from one of my text messages, and it said, oh, by the way, guys, those of you signed up for my texting service, if you text me a question, let me know who you are, because I just like to know who I'm talking to. I'll answer all the questions, whether you tell me or not, but it's always nice to know who I'm talking to. All right, so how long does it typically take someone to learn how to walk on a prosthetic above knee? All right, so we've got our textbook answers, and then we have what really happens in reality, right? So the textbook answers is it takes anywhere from 8 to 12 physical therapy sessions for a below-the-knee amputee, and that's averaging 2 times a week. So, you know, anywhere between 4 to 6 weeks, 2 times a week of physical therapy. And this is one-on-one therapy, guys. I'm not talking about that puppy mill factory physical therapist clinic that sees 3 patients at the same time in an hour. No. I'm talking about one-on-one physical therapy. For an above the knee, it can be anywhere from 12 to 20 sessions, right? And again, averaging 2 times a week. So you're looking at 6 to 10 weeks of therapy, okay? And for my bilaterals, it can range, you know, anywhere from 20 to 48 weeks, depending on if it's a bilateral below the knee, bilateral above the knee, or bilateral mixed AKBK. Okay, so that's the textbook answers. The reality is it's 2 steps forward, 1 step back, pun intended. Okay, so you might be getting 12 sessions, but it could be that you do a couple of sessions and then the fit of your socket starts to change and you have to go take your leg back to the physical, to the prosthetist, get the adjustment made, get whatever fix that has to come back, and then come back to the physical therapist. And you may have to take a, you know, backtrack just a little bit in the progress that you've made, right? So in my particular practice and my outpatient practice, I don't accept insurance. I'm a private pay practice. And part of the reason for that is it makes this process a little bit easier. Sometimes with insurance, you're given a very set amount of treatment sessions. And no matter how much you bark at the insurance, they won't give you more. Or if your patient has, you know, setbacks where either they get sick or they have to take their socket in and they, you know, regress a little bit in their progress, insurance can just make that a real pain. So with me and my own clinic with my patients, I'll see my patients. If we have to put them on hold, we put them on hold. And when they're done, they come back and we start up again as normal. Okay. So a lot of it just depends on your health. You know, if you are struggling with any other issues such as your diabetes, vascular disease, autoimmune, those are kind of like the big ones there that sometimes can set people back in their progress with therapy. And then also the fit of your socket, okay? So when you go to the physical therapist and you start working with them, the good news is you start getting your mobility back, right? And your limb will start to change and shrink and do all sorts of things. The bad news is it changes the fit of your socket. Usually you can kind of accommodate that by adding socks, or if you have an adjustable socket, by tightening that adjustable socket, but sometimes it might require a little bit more work. Okay, so it's kind of a give or take. And I tell people, don't get frustrated if you're not seeing a smooth, right, progress like that, because that's very rarely how it works. Usually you have a little bit of progress and then a tiny little setback and a little bit more progress and then maybe a bigger setback and then more progress. But over the course of time, you will see, hopefully, what's the word I'm looking for? Progress. There we go. All right. Let's see, who else we got going on board? We got a few people on board. Ortopedica Centroamericana joined in. We got some folks coming in from Central America in my Instagram channel, and I love it. Bienvenidos. Si le puedo contestar alguna pregunta, déjenme saber. All right, guys, let's go back. Let me get make sure I'm getting all these comments. Kim Marianne says, I told you I have to work on my kitten butt. Oh, Jerry, I appreciate it. You got my book. Eric says, very great material and strong body book. I appreciate that, Eric. All right. So Mark says, on having a snug fit for a below the knee amputation, is there such a thing as having a little snugness than what I have right now? It would be great. So yes, when it comes to the fit of a socket, guys, it's like having a well-fitting glove, okay? You don't want the socket to strangle your residual limb. And a lot of times you see some folks that they get a little aggressive with their fit and they come in and they're in a lot of pain and discomfort because it's too tight. But obviously you don't want it too loose, right? Because then it's just not going to hold on well. You're going to have poor suspension and it's going to fall off, right? Or it's going to rotate. That's another thing that happens a lot. It's a Goldilocks scenario, right? Not too tight. Not too loose, just right. All right, Eric says it took him 2 months to master walking. Mark says I was up walking the first day after getting my prosthetic. And yeah, guys, it's you know, when I have my patients, for the most part, within the first session or two, if not the first treatment, we have them walking a few steps, okay? There's a lot of foundational work that I do in those first couple of sessions because I wanna see a good, strong foundation. And once we've built a strong foundation, man, you just take off and you get going, okay? But definitely in those first couple of sessions, if I can help that person take those first few steps psychologically, it just gives you that encouragement that you need to know, like, yes, this will happen. It's going to happen, right? Let's see. Beth says, I've had to go back for physical therapy for 3 out of my 4 prosthetic devices, especially going from a K2 to a K3. And Beth brings up another point that I also like to encourage folks that when you're getting new prosthetic devices, whether you're getting a new socket, a new knee, a new foot, it's always good to check in with your neighborhood friendly physical therapist, right? Because sockets, everything works a little bit differently. And these little changes can have a dramatic effect on your gait pattern. So I'll tell my patients that, you know, if they've got a new device or new something to their socket or new to their leg, and they haven't seen me in a while, just shoot me a video of them walking and I can let them know, yep, you're doing good, keep going. Or nope, you know what? I'm starting to see some gait deviations there. We need to work on this and this and just tweak things a little bit to make sure you don't develop any bad habits. All right, next question we got Scott. Scott says, I liked this question. This is one of those questions where I'm just like, ooh, I'm pulling out my soapbox and I'm gonna stand up on that one. Scott asks, after 9 sessions in my new prosthesis, my physical therapist said after this week, they can't continue. I've made big steps in length, doubling distance I've walked. She said, we aren't doing skilled therapy and just walking can't get insurance to continue. Isn't it the PT's job to have a therapy plan in place? I'm at a loss here. Mostly we have just been walking because that's the main goal, but balance is still the main issue. It stinks that we don't have amputee specialists. Got any suggestions? They said I could continue this week, but I don't see 2 sessions worth the effort of it ending anyways. I walk some at home with a walker, but not all the time. Guys, this is pushing every single button that I have as a physical therapist. There's 2 sides to this answer, right? The first part is that, you know, Scott was approved for 11 or 12 sessions, right? And, you know, one of the problems that I do struggle with our current healthcare system, right, is that, you know, it's It's money that dictates patient care, not the patient's needs, right? That is a huge flaw in our healthcare system. So it's basically the insurance telling us what our patient needs based on reimbursement, based on money, right? That's what it boils down to. It boils down to money and resources. And you know, it, again, it's one of the many reasons I went into the private sector in outpatient care, because I was getting very frustrated as a clinician where I would be making progress with a patient and then the insurance visits would end. And I knew that I had so much more to do with that patient and so much further that the patient could go. Okay. Now, I do have colleagues that are amputee specialists that accept insurance and they work with insurance companies, and they are very good at what they do. They don't always win, right? But they certainly are very good at maximizing the amount of visits that they need for their patients. Now, when it comes to insurance, right, from a physical therapist standpoint, we need to justify goals and we need to justify progress. And when I mean goals, I mean functional goals, right? It used to be once upon a time that a physical therapist could just write, all right, increase range of motion, increase strength, increase walking, give me my visits. And the insurance would say, sure, here you go, right? But sometime in the late 90s, you know, Medicare changed a whole bunch of things and all of that went out the window, right? So insurance started cracking down and started saying, if you want physical therapy, you have to justify it like to the T, right? So they said, we need to create functional goals. So what's an example of a functional goal? Well, instead of just saying, I want my patient to be able to walk 100 feet or 150 feet, okay? Instead of writing that, as a physical therapist, I need to write, I want my patient to walk 150 feet with modified independence with a walker in order for them to be able to be mobile within their home safely. Right? So the 150 feet means nothing. What I have to prove to them is that 150 feet is approximately the distance you need to be able to walk to maneuver safely in your home. Okay. So it gets very, very tricky. But that being said, Scott, yes, you're right. It is the physical therapist's job to figure that out. Okay. And the other part of it is if the patient is demonstrating progress, okay, that is another key component. Okay, so let's say I had a goal for someone like Scott, and my goal for Scott was I want Scott to be able to walk 500 feet because 500 feet is the key distance to being able to ambulate in the community, right? That's considered to be community ambulation, right? So my goal is for Scott to be a community ambulator because he, for example, maybe lives by himself and he needs to be able to get to the grocery store. That's my functional goal. Now, if I'm at visit number 9 with, and guys, I don't treat Scott, I'm just kind of making this up as I go along. If I'm at visit number 9 with Scott and we're only at 150 feet, but he's been making progress with each visit, then that's how I'm going to get the insurance company to approve more, to show that we have not yet met our goal, but he is continuing to make progress. Okay. That's part of the job of the physical therapist. Okay. And there's another part here, because as you can see, like this question right now, it's just like zinging everything for me here. Apparently Scott's physical therapist said that insurance will not pay for skilled therapy. That phrase makes me want to just grind my teeth. And here's why. To me, therapy is therapy is therapy, right? I hate using the words skilled therapy. I hate using the words maintenance therapy. Therapy is therapy is therapy. Okay, and here's what I mean by that. Another one of the changes that Medicare made in the 90s that really kind of is that we could no longer continue to do maintenance therapy with our patients. We had to prove that it was skilled therapy. Okay, so people who, for example, came in for an ACL repair, right? That's a very long recovery process. If you have an ACL repair, it's about a 6 to 9 month recovery process. And what was happening is that therapists would rehabilitate their ACL patients. Usually it was a sports or an athlete person, right? Athletic person. And then would go on to continue strengthening them to get them ready to return back to the sports. Well, insurance started saying that's not skilled therapy. That's a hobby. You just need to get them strong enough so they can walk. Another thing, let's go to the opposite end of the spectrum, right? Let's go to perhaps the person who is barely able to sit up on their own, barely able to stand up on their own, right? And they don't have a lot of mobility. And perhaps their goals are just to be able to get out of bed and sit in a chair and do very simple mobility, right? In some cases, okay, they will claim that that is no longer skilled physical therapy, right? And what they consider to be maintenance therapy, in my opinion, is also quality of life therapy, right? So I've had the occasional patient like this, very low mobility patients, where they knew that they were never going to progress past a certain point in their mobility, but they wanted to at least maintain that quality of life and maintain their strength and maintain their range of motion as best as they could. And it's not to say that they would have needed physical therapy every day, but certainly to have a therapist come in once a week, once every 2 weeks, to keep updating their program and to keep assessing the patient to make sure that they weren't falling back. But insurance will call that maintenance therapy and they won't cover it. Right. So like, guys, no, I know I'm like going off on like a major soapbox tangent here, but you know, these are things that unfortunately it is a huge flaw in our healthcare system. And I don't know if I necessarily have a solution for any of this, but at the very best, at the very least I can do is arm you with this information. Okay. And yes, a physical therapist who, you know, who doesn't have the experience working with amputees, and isn't willing to try to either learn and is using your visits, in my opinion, is not doing you any justice. And I do, you know, I talk a lot about clinicians and things like that. And believe me, I hold my own colleagues' feet to the fire because I hold myself to a high standard and I hold my colleagues. And I have several colleagues who are phenomenal clinicians. But yes, if you feel like your physical therapist is just kind of wasting your physical therapy visits, don't be afraid to speak up. Don't be afraid to speak up and ask them questions like, where is this going? What are the goals that we are working towards in therapy? How do you plan on continuing this plan of care? What does my plan of care look like? Right? These are questions that you can pose to your physical therapist. Let me read some of these comments because I see a lot of comments flying in right now. Let me check over the, there we go. We got the Instagram channel over there. All right. Let me see. Mark says, I think having a positive attitude has a great effect on wanting to get up and walking. Absolutely. Ken says it's been 4 months and still on a cane. So yeah, Ken, when it comes to getting off a cane, and I talked about this last week, a lot of it has to do with what is the foundation that you built for your walking. If you skip a lot of the foundational work, and again, a lot of this foundational work is in my exercise programs that I have, then you might run into a plateau when it comes time to letting go of the cane or letting go of the walker. So oftentimes I may have patients that come in to see me months and sometimes even years after their amputation because they want to get off the cane, they want to get off the walker. And when I do an examination and I see that there are gaps in the foundations, right? So we take it back to the basics, start building that foundation again, and they become successful in being able to let go of the assistive device. Okay. Emily says, still waiting to get back into PT. I was discharged the day before I got a new foot. Ugh. No, Scott, you're not off your way of thinking. If you had 20 visits, yeah. I mean, and again, guys, it's not to say that you're going to be doing cartwheels after 20 visits, even with an experienced physical therapist, but at the very least, you should be making progress. Okay. And if you're not making progress, your physical therapist should be constantly reassessing and reevaluating to see why you're not making progress and how they can adjust the plan of care. There needs to be a plan. Okay. There needs to be a plan. Christy says, I'm still using the walker for as a right BK, December 2019, still walking with a little balance. And again, guys, if you know, with someone who's an amputee specialist, we're working on balance, proprioception, strength training, and coordination from day one. All of that has to go together. Can't stress enough the importance of building that foundation. Hey, Harsh, good to see you, man. Jeff says, Medi, I don't care. Yeah. Hey, Ben Gregory, man, I got to give you a shout out. You have been killing it. He's in my bilateral BK from Texas right there, Ben Gregory. And he has been running a race. I think one of these days, Ben Gregory, when the moon and the stars align, you and I are going to have to do a race together. And I'm just kind of putting that out there. All right, let's see. Rob says, my PM&R and PT work closely together to document and justify plans for my insurance when we needed additional sessions. And that's exactly how it should work, guys. That's exactly how it should work. Back when I did work for insurance-based practices, whether it was at the hospital or an outpatient center or for home health, I was counting each and every one of those visits. And I was, because of the fact that I knew I was not very good with insurance, like for me, I would always be in contact either with the secretary in charge of asking for additional visits, or I would be in constant communication with the doctor to make sure that if we needed extra visits, that we could jump ahead of it and get ahead of it and get these visits approved. But yeah, it's... It's exhausting. All right. Audrey says, what type of liner and socket would you recommend for someone with CRPS? I'm in left above the knee 1 year and hello from Maine. Hello, Audrey. So with chronic regional pain syndrome, it's not necessarily a type of liner or socket. It's the fit. So Audrey, it's just in that regard, it would be very similar to anybody else with a sock with an amputation. It's all about the fit of the socket. And this is something I stress a lot on the show. A lot of people are under the impression that being in pain is a normal thing about wearing a prosthetic device. And I can't tell you how many people say that, and it's absolutely not true, right? So when it comes to being fit for your socket, okay, especially someone like yourself who has CRPS, you need to have a really open line of communication with your prosthetist and letting him or her know, you know, what is it that you're feeling, right? A little discomfort in the beginning is normal. Why? Because you have a plastic socket sitting on your leg, right? And that's going to be a little bit uncomfortable to get used to that feeling, okay? But over the course of time, you gradually get used to this feeling, and there should be no pain associated with the socket. Okay. And Audrey, I especially hope that you're working with a physical therapist because they can really help you relearn those gait mechanics to make sure that you don't develop any gait deviations or any, you know, people call them a limp, that can cause bad habits and throw your alignment off and possibly just trigger some of that pain and discomfort from the CRPS. Okay. So I would say the key point here is to communicate with your prosthetist and always, you know, you may have to go back several times to get that comfortable fit. Right. But that is your primary goal. And yeah, it might involve trying a different kind of liner and changing up the fit of the socket a little bit there. Scott says, I kind of felt like they sent me to fail due to my size. I'm 6'8" and 500 pounds. So, you know, Scott, you're a big guy, right? And that does present sometimes with challenges in working with an outpatient clinic. But at this point, you know, I know I've worked with several, bariatric patients in my career, and just in the recent 5 to 10 years. And I know that that is becoming a normal part of physical therapy to work with a bariatric patient. Okay. And on, you know, even for me, when I've had a couple of pretty complex, bariatric patients, and I don't have fancy equipment. I don't have the harnesses that go to the ceiling or anything like that. I just have a really sturdy set of parallel bars. And we were able to make progress with these patients. Okay. So it is possible, Scott, and I truly, my heart goes out to you, and I wish you lived nearby me so I could help you out. You know, but keep looking around your area, guys. I know it can be so frustrating when you don't have a physical therapist with amputee experience. And sometimes I say all it takes is to have a physical therapist who's hungry to learn, right? You know, that was me once upon a time, 20 years ago, when I started learning more about amputee care. But if you can even just find a therapist, even if they don't have any experience, but they want to learn, right? And they're willing to talk to your prosthetist and work together to help you out, you'll get somewhere there. John says, I had a therapist tell me he had to show progress on his reports or he didn't get paid. Yeah, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. Yeah, that's a whole show. I could do a whole show on the behind the scenes look on physical therapy in the United States, and not just physical therapy. I know my occupational therapist colleagues also experience some of this, and I know our prosthetists as well, just the frustrations that we have in having a third party payer system. And again, I don't have any solutions. I'm not a fan of socialized medicine. I don't think that works either. But you know, given all the countries in this world, I'd still would rather live in the United States with regards to how the healthcare system works. It's not perfect, it's flawed, but it's what we've got. And I wish I had solutions, guys, but I don't. Unfortunately, I don't there. Christy says, I was in physical therapy 7 months, got graduated too early, lots worked still to do in 2020. Chris says, I'm a physical therapist from Philly, and I feel like a lot of PTs are nervous to treat people with amputations, but are not able to say that, and they don't know what they're doing. Sorry, I had to hop on that soapbox with you. Chris, you're absolutely right. Chris, absolutely right. And guys, I'm going to tell you a dirty little secret here. When I first started working as a physical therapist, as a licensed physical therapist, right, I barely knew the difference between above the knee and a below the knee amputee. No joke. I did not have a lot of education in physical therapy school. It just wasn't a fleshed out part of our curriculum, which is a travesty. I went to a fantastic physical therapy school. I got a great education. But when it came to the amputee care, and guys, you want to hear the irony of it? The profession of physical therapy started with the treatment of amputees in World War I. We were physician extenders, and we helped burn victims and amputees. So how is it that the majority of physical therapists nowadays would not know what to do with an amputee? And Chris, you're absolutely right. They're very nervous, right? I know I was nervous, and thank goodness when I got the amputee rotation at that hospital, I was working with one of the top specialists in the country, and he trained me. And he trained me, woo, right? Top to bottom. Right. And I received a wonderful education there, and also just a passion for working with this particular population. Right. But it's incredibly intimidating. And the irony is we have the knowledge that we need. As physical therapists, we are the experts on assessing gait and treating gait and diagnosing gait. We are the gait experts. Right. We treat stroke patients, spinal cord injury, traumatic brain injury patients. So why are we so afraid to work with amputee patients? To me, it's actually a little bit easier to work with someone with an amputation compared to someone who has a severe traumatic brain injury. Right. If I have any physical therapists on board and you guys want to chime in and back me up on this, feel free to do so. Right. And I think a lot of times physical therapists do get intimidated with the componentry, the prosthetic componentry. Totally understandable. Okay. But again, this is where I tell my colleagues and young students, go make friends with the prosthetist, right? They are wonderful resources for this, right? And it's quite amazing that if you have the information to be a licensed therapist, you passed your licensing board, that means you have the knowledge for gait training. Right? You just need someone to talk to you a little bit about those prosthetic components. It really is just that simple. You just got to go do it. John says a lot of therapists in my area aren't experienced with amputees. And I will say this, guys, I'm not trying to like completely bash my colleagues. You know, I want to be encouraging about this. Another thing that kind of works against us is, yes, so there was somebody there who said that the physical therapist wasn't going to get paid unless their visits were and notes were approved. Okay, so unfortunately nowadays, a lot of physical therapists are working in outpatient clinics where they're being asked to see 3 to 6 patients an hour. That's a lot. I cannot do that. I cannot see 3 to 6 patients in 1 hour. To me, that's not physical therapy. That's just factory work. That's just a puppy mill, right? And especially with an amputee where there's so much hands-on going on. Like guys, when I'm working with my patients, I'm like white on rice with them. Like I don't leave their side. Okay. Number one, I want to make sure they're doing everything correctly. And number two, it's a safety thing. Right? We're doing balance. We're walking. We're doing all sorts of crazy things. I'm not going to leave my patient alone. I got to be with them the whole time. Okay. But unfortunately, with the way some clinical models are set up in these practices, physical therapists can't do that. And they have to see 3 to 6 patients at a time. So you know, the quality of care that they can deliver to their patient. Right? I know, I feel like I sound like I'm being a negative Nancy right now. So let's see. Emily says, I feel like the standards are based on people who were fully ambulatory before amputation. So automatically I'm at a disadvantage. Took a year to be able to walk with a walker when I was little and I had two full legs. So how is it going to be any easier with only one good leg? Don't even get me started. And yes, Emily, I mean, you're considered to be a little bit more of a complex amputee patient. And this is something I also teach my students whenever I have a student or somebody, a younger physical therapist listening in, is, you know, our amputees nowadays are not just amputees, right? They may have orthopedic trauma from a car accident. They may have a spinal cord injury. They may have a congenital issue such as spina bifida, like Emily. Right? They may have a stroke, right? They may be an amputee and then experience a stroke, or they may be an amputee and now have a joint replacement, right? So there's a lot of complexities that are involved. And as physical therapists, we are trained to handle this. And we need to not be afraid of these cases and learning how to adjust the plan of care accordingly to each patient, right? As well as the goals and the expectations, right? Okay. Let's jump on overboard. Okay, so Instagram is good. Okay, so Ken says, I'm working hard but frustrated. I can't walk yet without a limp, and that's why I use my cane. And again, Ken, this is where I would really encourage you, if you can, go find a physical therapist. I know I'm like talking a little negatively today about it, but good, you know, therapists, 99 out of 100 of them, good people, good eggs, want to help people, want to help you get better. John, I am so sorry to hear that. That is not appropriate for your clinician to have said that. Beth says, I fired my first PT because he wouldn't listen to my goals and found another one, and she's been my rocker 4 years. Yep. You might have to break a few eggs but to make that omelet. Hey, Denise, glad you're in here from North Carolina. I was just in your neck of the woods last week and loving it. Mark says, on walking, I set a goal of going 20 to 30 feet further each day I did therapy. Bravo. Emily says, I understand being in control of your own therapy session, but what do you do when your physical therapist asks what you want to work on? Isn't that their job? I'm just learning and I don't know yet. Yeah, Emily, it is their job. Your job is to tell the therapist, these are my goals. This is what I want to be able to do, right? And then it's your physical therapist's job to, number one, determine if it's a feasible goal, right? And number two, to figure out how to get you to that goal. So if a physical therapist, you show up to a physical therapist session and they say, well, what do you want to work on today? I would turn it right back on them and say exactly what you just said, Emily. Just say, well, that's kind of your job to let me know. This is my goal and you need to let me know how to get to that goal. Jeff says, Willowwood liners. Oh, thank you, Jeff. Jeff is one of our prosthetists that listens in on the show, and I do appreciate his input. And he says, Willowwood liners with spirit fabric are supposed to be a little less tight and might feel better for CRPS. Thank you, Jeff. Hola, comadre. All right, let's see. Beth says, my physical therapist always asked me what I was struggling with at home so she could alleviate those challenges. And that is how it's done. That's how it's done, right? Okay. James says, I've been watching for some years and I don't comment much, but you inspired me and the results are awesome. I'm back to work and no one knows I'm a left VK unless I tell them. Thank you and keep up. Oh, James, thank you so much for writing that. I really appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I am so happy to hear that you are back at work. Wonderful. All right. Okay, guys, I'm going to get to these questions because I did promise some folks that these are some of the questions I had missed and I want to get to them. This one came from a text that I was not able to answer. And it says, if I could get a piece of workout equipment to help with strength and weight loss, what would you suggest? A recumbent bike, a rower? I am a below the knee amputee. Oh, I like this question. Okay, so for me, the best exercise is the one that you will stick with, right? I like to run. I do not like going to a gym. I do not like going to exercise classes. I don't like Zumba. I'm not a yoga person. That's not my thing, right? I tried all that at once and I was never consistent with it. I like to run. So I run, right? So I say the same thing to my patients when they ask me, what should I do for maintenance, for fitness, for this? And I go, think about what it is that you like to do and that you will continue to do, that you will be consistent with. And then it's just a matter of figuring out how to adapt that particular activity to your, to fit your needs. As a below the knee, you're going to have a lot more options. Yes, you can use a rower. You can use a recumbent bicycle. I love recumbent bicycles, right? Especially now that we're heading into spring and we can be out a little bit more. Okay. For those of you who perhaps are not able to use a recumbent bicycle, or you're in a high above the knee, or some of my bilaterals, a hand bicycle, right? I've had really wonderful success stories of patients who were able to drop weight using a hand bicycle, right? The whole goal is to elevate your heart rate and get yourself going. And you can do that beautifully with a hand bicycle. Okay. Again, this is where your physical therapist can help design a program for you for strengthening, especially focusing on the muscles, butt muscles that we mentioned earlier, right? Those muscles that need a little bit more attention, and then helping you adjust that plan every month, every couple of months. Okay. So I do have some patients that they met their mobility goals a while back, and they just come and check back in with me to get updated on their fitness programs, right? They'll say, okay, you know, this program is getting a little easy. I need a little tweak here, tweak there, and to help keep that program challenging. Okay. But first, it just starts off with, what is it that you like to do for fitness? And then figure out a way to make that work for you. And this includes, in Florida, swimming. I have a lot of folks who love to be in the water. And I highly encourage water aerobics programs, especially at our local YMCAs. They have some really great programs, kayaking, canoeing, a lot of these things that are available here, you know, because we live in Florida. All right, next question. Dick Dever says, I am 8 years into my left below the knee amputee life, and I'm currently experiencing something new. Been able to walk pain-free, but recently, after approximately a quarter mile or so, my residual limb has become very painful. It's not a stabbing pain, more like a throbbing toothache. If I get off of my leg, the aching will subside. I've been using my current leg for over 3 years, and I'm not sure what would be causing the discomfort. I'm a very active, and if I wear long pants, most folks don't realize I'm an amputee. I have an appointment with my prosthetist in 4 weeks to check my socket fit, and I'm just curious what might be causing the situation. That one, again, so I can only do like the whole Monday morning quarterback thing because I can't see the person, see you in person, Dick Devers. So if this is a socket that you've been using for 3 years and you haven't had any dramatic changes in the fit, that's a good one. Usually when people tell me that they have pain in weight bearing and it's not necessarily coming from the socket, I start to wonder, is there perhaps a bone spur that could be forming, or a neuroma that could be forming? Usually with the neuromas, it's a very sharp, intense electric type pain. But again, this is something that you have to really see the in person to see, like, okay, what is the alignment looking at? What does the prosthesis look like? What does the fit look like right now? It could be that for whatever reason, even though you've had the prosthesis for 3 years, if your leg, if you've gained a little bit of weight, right? And now maybe that socket is a little bit tighter. That could explain that, why it's like a throbbing type toothache pain. That's usually sometimes what I hear sometimes when a socket is fitting too tightly. And it not necessarily like super tight, but just meaning just tight enough that over the course of walking, it starts to really get tight there. But again, this is just, like I said, Monday morning quarterback. I'm glad you're going to go see your prosthetist. I wish it were a little bit sooner than 4 weeks though. Gosh. But have your prosthetist, ask your prosthetist, do you think I have a bone spur? Usually if a patient comes in like that, I can usually just with my thumbs kind of poke into the area. I know I'm not very nice, poke into the area that my patient is complaining about with the pain. And if I can elicit the pain, then that usually tells me, okay, there's something in there that's causing that, something in there that we need to kind of just take a look at. So Audrey asks, why is there such a rush to get amps away from aids, from walking aids? Actually, Audrey, I am not usually in a hurry when it comes to removing the assistive device from my patients. Usually what I do when a patient comes in to see me and I assess, you know, what their goals are going to be. And if I think the person is going to be able to walk without an assistive device, without the use of a cane or walker or crutches, you know, once I've determined that that is going to be a reasonable goal for them, I'm not necessarily in a hurry to get them off the device. It's more about getting that foundation, you know, because for me, once I've established a strong foundation of strength, proprioception, balance, and coordination, getting the patient off the walking device happens pretty smoothly. There are times where I've established that foundation with my patients and I know that they have the strength and I know that they have everything, and I remove the walking device and they, you know, they kind of freak out, right? So it shows me, okay, we need to backtrack just a little bit, keep working on certain things so that they can be confident when they come off that device. Yeah. I mean, when I was a younger therapist, yeah, I when I was younger and inexperienced, I used to be like, okay, I got to get this patient off this walking device as soon as possible, because if not, they're going to get too used to it and they're never going to be able to come off of it. And I've learned over the years that that's not necessarily the case. And again, this is just me with my years of experience. I don't know any of the literature numbers on that. What I've noticed is when you do take the patient away, the device away too soon, then it becomes a detriment because they don't have the stability or the strength or the balance, right? And you end up setting yourself back even more. But no, I've had several cases. In fact, most of my cases that come to see me in my current outpatient clinic are people who are months to years out of their amputation. And they've been using an assistive device for quite a long time. You know, now, is everyone a candidate for walking without an assistive device? Not necessarily. There are some people who will continue to need to use a walking device, but I don't see that as a failure. I don't see that as a detriment. For me, I think of it as, well, this walking device is going to give my patient the highest level of independence, right? And I try to talk to my patients like that, because sometimes folks, you know, they come to the realization that even with good therapy and everything that we do, they may still need to use a cane or crutches or a walker. And the way I see it is it allows you to have that independence, whether in your home or in your community. Steve, I got a lot of physical therapists here on board this evening. I'm so excited. So Steven says, PT year with prosthetics training and experience. How long have you had your own practice, COSI? I've had it open for 6 years now. So I opened January 4th, 2018. I agree the O&P training is lacking in PT schools. Additional specialized training and CEUs are necessary to be successful with this patient population. And love your expertise. Thank you. Well done. Thank you, Stephen. I really appreciate those words. And guys, I'm so tickled whenever I see fellow physical therapists on board on the show. So thank you guys for joining in and for chiming in. And yes, unfortunately, I will say this, in Florida, I am starting to see some of the PT schools here having a better developed amputee program. So for example, the University of St. Augustine, Dr. Scott Love, he is a phenomenal human being, phenomenal PT. He's also an above the knee amputee himself. And he has a great amputee program for his students. Wonderful program. And he also has CEUs. He's created a CEU program. Down at the University of Miami, of course, we have Dr. Bob Gailey, right? Woohoo, big guru, our amputee physical therapy guru, right? So he's got a whole camp down there and teaching those kids down there. I'm trying to think where else. Yeah, I guess that is right. That's kind of all for now in Florida. And as far as the CEUs, I do know, like I said, Scott Love has a CEUs going on right now. Mission Gate. So for those of you who are my physical therapists here, Mission Gate, look them up on YouTube and look them up on Google. They do have great continuing education courses for physical therapists as well for amputee care. All right. I need some water. Y'all are talking me out here. Here we go. Next question. And guys, I'm really trying to get to the questions here, because as I mentioned earlier in the show, I goofed when I started my texting service a year ago, and I didn't realize that it was archiving my text messages. So literally today I sat and returned over 100 text messages to people. people who had texted me a year ago, because I just have this thing that when you text someone a question or you text someone, you need to return the text message. So anyways, one of these messages is from John. It says, John says, I've been a left AK since August of 2021. I didn't start physical therapy until 2022 due to healing issues. So almost a year later, I went through 20 sessions one day a week. After a few sessions, my original therapist went on medical leave and I was passed around to four therapists. We're starting to see a pattern here with tonight's show, huh? They just went through the notes to see what procedures I was doing and never mentioned what I was doing right or wrong until I complained to the team leader. They kept me with one therapist, but after 20 sessions, I feel like I should be doing more than what I'm currently capable of. I can get around with a walker and up and down steps, but I have no balance at all. My last session, I was able to walk the parallel bars one-handed twice. What can I do at home to strengthen and regain my balance? My knee is an Ottobock 3R60. So you have a really nice little mechanical knee there with Ottobock. I really like that knee. Okay, so here's what I'm going to do, guys. How many of you have my Strong Body program? How many have my Strong Body program? Let's see a show of hands here. Show of hands. All right. So guys, I'm going to take you, for those of you watching my podcast right now, if you look in the comments section, I will be posting the link to my Strong Body program. Right now, I'm going to share my screen because I want to show you guys. A lot of you guys tonight have been asking about balance to get off your walking device and to improve just general balance. So I'm going to take you to the one set of exercises that both my AKs and my BKs can do, my beginners, my intermediate, and even my advanced walkers. So let me just share my screen. Let me make sure I do this right. Okay, so if you are watching the live show, you're going to be able to see this screen right now where I've taken you to the Strong Body website. We're going to log in. And again, those of you who are listening to me on the podcast, you can click on the link that says strongbody.cosytalks.com. And it's going to take you to that front page and you can see some of the sample videos that are on there. But we are currently in the program. So for my above the knee, okay, you can go to legs. Actually, we're going to go to the balance one. Let's do balance. Okay, and you're going to go to the weight shifting right here. Okay, these are the exercises. I'm going to go ahead and play a few seconds of it so you guys can listen in.
Okay, so now that you've had a chance to practice the square up position, we're going to show you the weight shifting exercise. Every single person that comes through my clinic, whether they are a beginner prosthetic user or they are a high-end athlete, I have them do these exercises. These are fantastic for getting to put your weight through your prosthesis, activating those hip stabilizer muscles, and also giving you that confidence when you're learning to use your prosthesis. For my above the knee amputees, this is fantastic because it really gives them a chance to test out that knee to see what the limitations are and where those boundaries are. Now, when you're first doing this exercise, I encourage my folks to either do it in front of a kitchen counter where they can rest their hands on the kitchen counter, or to have two sturdy chairs on each side of them. So as you can see, Robin is already in the square up position. And what I'm gonna have her do is I'm gonna have her shift her weight first to the prosthetic side and then over to her sound limb. Now, it's not a very large movement, folks. It's not very large, and she's not popping out her hip when she does this. She's using these glute muscles to shift her weight side to side and really taking the time to put the weight in through that prosthesis. This is one of those exercises that you can do over and over and over again. And the more you repeat doing this exercise, the more confidence you're gonna feel grounded in that exercise. Now, once you've done side to side and you have mastered that movement, the next movement is going to be forward and backward. Okay, and what I mean by this is she's gonna be doing a heel to toe weight shift. And as you can see, it's a very subtle movement. It's not a very large movement. She's having to use her arms to balance herself out. This is also a great one for my above the knee because it lets you get comfortable with putting the toe load on and just seeing, okay, where is my knee going to start to bend or where is it going to stay straight? Okay. This is also teaching and getting your brain ready for taking that heel to toe progression while you take a step, but we're doing it in a very simplified environment where your brain just has to think about this one movement. Again, when you're first starting to do this exercise, do it in front of a kitchen counter with your fingers on the counter or with two sturdy chairs on each side of you.
Okay, guys. So reconnecting my microphone. Guys, can you guys give me a thumbs up? Did it go through? Is my microphone working right now? Sometimes things can get a little bit tricky when I'm trying to switch back and forth from these screens. Did it go through? Yes, it went through. Thank you guys. Okay. So for those of you who are asking, how can I get off my walker? How can I get off my cane? Again, kind of hard for me to tell you when I can't see you and put my hands on you and figure out what's really the deficit going on. But as I mentioned in that video, every single patient that comes to my clinic, I have them do the weight shifting exercises. And that's usually where I start to see a lot of little red flags in the gaps in that foundation that I'm talking about, right? For those of you who are watching the live show, you could see Robin in the video, how nice and smooth she was shifting her weight side to side, forward and backward. Those of you who are listening in on the podcast, you know, hopefully you were able to listen to kind of what I was doing and kind of get a mental picture of what was going on there. Right. But weight shifting, again, it's a very simple exercise to do. You can do it safely within your home, and it allows you to really start putting that weight into the prosthesis. Right. If you're not able to do these weight shifts smoothly, that's telling you a lot right there, guys. If you don't have the confidence and trust and strength to be able to do this weight shifting smoothly, that's letting you know why you're not getting off that cane or the walker. And the good news is it not only diagnoses your problem, but it's also a solution to your problem, because that's where you start, right? You start with those weight shifts. Yes? All right, guys, I am talked out, which is hard to do to a Cuban, because we Cubans, we just talk and talk and talk and talk and talk. But guys, as I mentioned earlier in the show, I do have several platforms where many of you send me your questions and your messages. And it is me, myself, and I checking all of those messaging platforms, which means on occasion, I may forget or I may accidentally skip a question. If I should happen to skip your question, please know that it was not on purpose, and I have no problems with you nudging me and saying, hey, Kosi, you still haven't answered my question. Would you mind answering my question? I can tell you guys the best way to reach me is either through the texting service or through this Kosi at kositalks.com email, okay? Sherry, if you go to my Strong Body website, you can, hang on, I'm typing it in. If you go to the Strong Body website, and it's strongbody.cositalks.com, you can subscribe to have access to the videos, or you can also purchase the books that go with the videos. So for every video that is in that program, there is a corresponding book entry. Some people like to read, some people like to watch videos. I'm somebody who likes to do both, so that's why I created both of them. Okay. So for those of you watching the podcast, or not watching, listening to the podcast, please leave me a 5-star review. Please subscribe to the channel, all that kind of good stuff that you're supposed to do when you're listening to a podcast, because it helps me keep things moving along. And for those of you who are watching me on Facebook Live, YouTube Live, please share this show out. It really helps get the word, and it makes the Facebook gods happy with those algorithms. So, and guys, I do appreciate the support. So guys, if I missed your question, email me. And if not, I will see you next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. God bless, guys, and I will see you later.